You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hi, this is David Cohn, and it's 3 p.m. The Michael K. Show starts now. Don't screw it up, boys.
Thank you, Coney, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed The Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Wednesday. It is February 17th, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, and Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 3.5 hours, and the other 20 and a half, that is certainly your responsibility. Hope you're having a wonderful day. There's some bad weather on the way, but enjoy it while you can, because
when
it's
is
pretty
it coming?
Nice today. It's supposed to come tomorrow morning.
Do you not watch the news, Peter? Are you engaged at all in anything but wrestling, hip-hop, and the occasional basketball game? How do you not know that there's a storm coming?
Honest, I'm at this point, it's every other day. I just, I check in. I'm like, oh no, is there one coming Monday when I'm traveling? The news is yes, supposedly there is. And that's it. I mean,
so it's just about you. That's all you worry about, not the other people.
I can't say it's all about me, but you know.
A good portion of it.
Hold on. When most of us check the weather, That's a selfish endeavor for the most part.
Now, I worry about the world as a whole. I mean, I'm worried about the people in Texas. I don't just worry about myself.
Oh no, I'm worried. Right. I know about that story. I listened to the Daily today about the electricity grid. I'm trying my best.
Good for you. Baseball starting. A new world.
I love baseball.
Everybody's young again. Everybody has a chance to win. But in some cities, they don't. Baltimore, there's no chance to win.
I'm not sure they're excited in Colorado.
No, they're not. You're right. But in New York, both fan bases can be excited. Both Aaron Boone and Luis Rojas spoke today. The Yankees pitchers and catchers reported today. And something jumped out at me in the Post today. And it's a story about betting and the bets at the MGM Grand, and that's Don's BetMGM. That's Don's sports.
That's right.
The Mets are the most popular choice to win the 2021 World Series by a wide margin. So the Mets account for 24.6% of all tickets and 31.2% of total money wagered, aka the handle, at BetMGM Sportsbooks nationwide, more than doubling the runner-up, which ironically enough happens to be the Yankees. So the Yankees have 14.2% of the handle. The Mets, 31.2%. Now you can say, well, where are the Dodgers? The Dodgers are fifth. They have 10.5% of the handle. And you can wonder, well, that doesn't make sense. Well, here's what makes sense. The Mets are 12-1 to win the World Series. So you're trying to get the best odds on a team that actually could win. So, and the Mets are a New York-based team, so they have a large fan base. So they're number one because people think they're going to get the best bang for their buck. The Yankees are 6-1. So they have 14.2% of the handle. The Padres, 9-1, 6.5% of the handle. The Cardinals are 22-1 at 7.4. And then the Dodgers, they're just 7-2 at 10.5. So it doesn't mean that the Mets are going to win the World Series, but most people are betting on the Mets.
See, that I'm not a big gambler, but when I started doing the ice picks and I joined BetMGM and I started messing around with it. And you know, I'll just give you an example. Like, I can just make an ice pick, which I will later on today.
Ooh.
And I can just, I can say, you know what? I'm gonna bet the Blackhawks over the Red Wings. And I probably would get it right because the Blackhawks are playing really well, and Detroit's one of the worst teams in the league. But that's at -140. There's no value to that. So I wouldn't make that my ice pick because there's no betting value at -140.
That's right.
So it's not so much that everybody thinks the Mets are going to win the World Series. That's the best value on the board. A team that's got a chance to do it. You wouldn't be floored if they did it, but if they did do it, I get bang for the buck. At 12-1, That to me is a healthy bet. So that's what you got to find. You got to find a team that you think could win, but is the best value to bet. And the Mets at 12-1, that's the best value. So it's not the world saying, I think they've got the best chance. It's how can I make myself some money?
All right, so let's talk about the likelihood of both of these teams. The Yankees, we'll start with them. They have the best team in the American League East. I think they have the best team in the American League. The only other team I think that could give them a little bit of trouble would be the Chicago White Sox in terms of a team that is really good, has a good manager, the bullpen, the rotation. Minnesota's good, but I think they've taken a little bit of a step back from last year, but still good. They can win the Central. I don't see the Astros the way everybody else sees the Astros. Dusty Baker's their manager, but it's still not a great, great, great team. I look at the Yankees. There's a lot of question marks. I'm not going to say they're a flawless team, but I would look at the Yankees as the favorite to come out of the American League. Out of the American League.
But that's – yeah. Right. I mean, really, I mean, who else are you picking?
It's a weak league right now.
Unless you want to just take a flyer and just say, I think – this team is just going to surprise a lot of people or whatever, like I said with the bets. But just having a conversation fan to fan, whatever holes the Yankees have, they're winning this division. They're winning it going away. And I got to be honest with you, Michael, since the Red Sox have taken this turn, it's taken a lot of fun out of following the Yankees in the regular season as far as that sense of urgency. Last year was different because it was only 60 games. And you saw with only 60 games, that wasn't enough for the Yankees to overcome and had to settle for where they finished. Where if there was 162 games, I think they would have eventually outlasted Tampa and probably would have won that division. But with only a 60-game schedule, Tampa ended up winning it, so it made it interesting. Fun conversation. But, Michael, do you know what has to happen to this Yankee team for not to win the division?
All right, let's talk about that, because I think there are things that can happen.
Not a thing.
Well,
zero.
No.
No shot.
Well, first of all, the Toronto Blue Jays have improved a lot.
Okay.
I still don't think their pitching's good enough. And Tampa Bay, you know, got rid of Morton, which is a big loss, and got rid of Snell. Their lineup remains the same. And what they've done is they've done a little bit of what the Yankees did, but on a wider basis, they've thrown a lot of clumps of wet toilet paper up against the wall to see what's going to stick. You know, Michael Walker, you know, players like that, Rich Hill. They've gotten innings, and it's a smart organization. So I wouldn't count them out to make the playoffs. I don't think they're good enough to beat out the Yankees for the East. But, you know, the Yankees have a lot of big ifs. So the people that make these prognostications look at it and go, the Yankees are going to have the most wins in the American League, and I agree. But there are things that can go wrong. And the two things that can go wrong are number two and three in their rotation. Corey Kluber pitched one inning last year. Jameson Taillon pitched zero innings last year. So the Yankees are banking on them being healthy. If they're not, all of a sudden your number two and three starters are not there. And you're going to have to make do with others. So right now it looks strong. You've got Cole, you've got Taillon, you've got Kluber, and you've got Jordan Montgomery. And then you've got a good bunch of guys that are going to battle for that fifth spot. And they're going to need all of their 10 starting pitchers to contribute at some point, because you're going to go from a 60-game season to 162. So you're going to have to make up 102 games of innings with guys that haven't pitched. The second and third starters pitched one inning last year, and their surest thing is Gerrit Cole, and all of a sudden he's going to take a big jump in innings. So every team's going to go through that, but that's what could go wrong for the Yankees. Otherwise, injury is always a problem, but their lineup is strong. Today, Aaron Boone said that Clint Frazier is the starting left fielder, so they're set. Can Gary Sanchez return to form? We'll see. But they've got enough in the lineup. I think their bullpen's very good. Now let's shift over to the Mets.
Well, before we do that, though.
Okay.
All right. You brought up all those ifs. And again, forget last year. How many more injuries has any other team had than the Yankees going back to like 2018, 2019?
Could anyone have had more?
I mean, just everybody. I mean, you lose Severino. You lose Paxton for a time. You know, so many missed starts here or there, and they still go out there and they win 100 games.
You can't keep tempting fate,
though, Don. You lose Judge, you
lose
Stanton. I mean, how many times we're like, who are these guys? And yet, every year, they survive them because the depth in the organization is unbelievable. Their ability to improve at the trading deadline is better than anybody else's. So I hear what you're saying, Michael, but who's had more injuries in the last, like, half decade than the Yankees? And nothing's hurt them, at least in the regular season.
But you don't want to keep tempting fate. And if you I think that the two guys that have to give them something are Kluber and Tyone. If they don't, again, you're not losing the fourth and fifth starters. You're losing your second and third starters. That's the way this rotation is going to set up. And the Yankees firmly believe that these guys will be able to stay healthy. If they are, then it's a home run. Then I think they don't even blink before they get to the World Series. That's how good they are. Now the Mets. Unlike a lot of Met fans, I love what they've done this year. Now, did they get any of the top four free agents? No, they didn't. But did they improve? Yes, they did. James McCann is a better catcher than the Mets have had in a long time. Should they have waited for JT Realmuto? I understand why they didn't. I understand why they didn't. So they got a guy who over the last couple of years has certainly ascended in his career. Is he going to continue that ascent? And he's a good defensive catcher, and the Mets pitching is important. So let's look at their pitching. You've got the best pitcher in baseball, or one of the best pitchers in baseball, in DeGrom. Then you've got Carrasco, and you've got Stroman. And then it starts to get a little bit, How much do you have after that? Now, you're going to bank on getting back Syndergaard in June or July. They're hoping June. He's a big, strong guy. If they get this guy, that's a huge, huge addition to them. Because you're not just adding a pitcher. You're adding one of the best pitchers in baseball. That's what you're getting with Noah Syndergaard. So that would be a big one, too. The young left-hander is somebody that's going to be a part of it as well. Now, the bullpen could be problematic as well. And you've got a lot of other parts the Mets have, you know, Yamamoto and pitchers of that ilk. But I don't think they're matching up with the Padres or the Dodgers starting staff. Their lineup is good. Their bullpen scares me, Don. Seth Lugo, when's he getting back? Also, do you really feel good about Edwin Diaz? What are you getting out of Familia, who had a pretty good year last year? What are you getting out of Betances? So the bullpen is not as stout as it could be. I like their lineup a lot. Their defense scares me. They added a superb defender in Francisco Lindor. Absolutely superb. Second base, not a great defender. Third base, not a great defender. First base, if it's Alonso, there's no DH, not a great defender. If you're starting with Nimmo in center field, not a great defender. Up the middle, that's not good, Don. The Mets are the one team in baseball, I think, that really needs to have the universal DH. Because all of a sudden, Dominic Smith, he'll play first. Alonso will be the DH. You can use Pilar out there, Almora. You've got other people that you can put in the outfield that will make them better. And then move Brandon Nimmo over to left field where he's better. Conforto is playing for a contract. That's good as well. But I got to be honest. I don't see the Mets being better, even by close margin, than the Dodgers or the Padres, do you?
No. And here's the issue, is that you're in a position, Michael, where if you do not win this division, there's only one slot open for you, because I think the Padres are getting that first wild card.
Good point.
So Dodgers win the division, Padres get the first wild card. That means the Mets finish in third in their division, they don't make it. They'd have to finish at least in second, because I think the Padres are the X factor. This is not the format that we had last year. So with a two wild card system, Michael, you're going to have to either win this division or finish in second, because I don't think there's a wild card team that's going to come out of the Central.
Right.
So the
although
Padres
the Central could beat up and get wins.
You might have four teams battling for two spots. Right?
Yeah.
Phillies, Washington, Atlanta, and the Mets all battling for two spots. One's going to win the division, then the other three are battling for one spot. Because I think the Padres are taking that wild card. Because I think the Padres are going to be a 90-plus win team.
And then you have to worry, though, that a team in the Central could beat up on the real dregs of the Central and actually get enough wins to be the wild card. I don't know. Can the Cubs be that team? Or are they going to sell people off? Right now they're staying with Chris Bryant. They're staying with their shortstop. They're staying with all the people that are going to be free agents. But at the trade deadline, if they're not in there, they're going to trade those people off to build up their farm system. So the Central's kind of hanky. But you can beat up on other teams in the Central. The Central's going to be awful. Pittsburgh's going to be an awful, 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 awful team. You play them 19 times. Now, it's going to be hard for the Mets or the Nationals or the Braves or the Phillies to beat up on any teams in the East, which you're going to play 19 times, Don, because they're all good. Even the Marlins are decent. They made the playoffs last year and won a round. So now you got to step back and go, I might have to win the division to make the playoffs, because the second place team in that division might have an 85 win season, and that might not be good enough.
And that's why, as high as on the Mets as I am, I mean, will Philadelphia be better? All right, you got another year with Joe Girardi. This is a team that has back to back 500 seasons, a 500 season with Harper. This will be the second year with Harper. I guess third year, right? Because the last year was the 60-game schedule. I think Philadelphia could be better. I think Washington could be better. I still think Atlanta's the team to beat in that division, Michael. So, yeah, you might be, you know, high 80s win team, and you're finishing third or fourth. So, yeah. You know, you have improved, but with it going back to the old format in a very, very difficult division. They're in the Central, Michael. I think they win it. You know, but with the Padres there, that I think is also, you know, you can make the case, Michael, the Padres might be the second best team in the league.
They might be the second best team in baseball.
Right. And so, but they won't win the division because the Dodgers are the best. So that locks up a wild card, I think, for San Diego. San Diego might win 95 games. So that, bang, not only do they lock up a wild card spot, they lock up the first wild card. So now you're battling for the division. And if you don't win the division, you're now that if you don't have anybody, just with nobody coming out of the Central but the division winner, that's three teams battling for one spot. So let's just say, for sake of argument, Atlanta wins the division. That's Washington, Philadelphia, and the Mets possibly all battling for one playoff spot.
And cannibalizing each other and not letting one team get a lot of wins. You'd love it. Like you said, the Padres could win 95 games. I don't know if the second place team in the NL East could get 95 wins because they're all playing each other so many times and they're good. There's no gimmies there. There's a lot of gimmies in the National League West. There's a lot of gimmies in the National League Central, and that helps the wild card. Now, well, we should say, there's still a chance there's going to be universal DH, and there's still a chance that right before the season starts or in the fourth inning of the first game, baseball will announce, oh, by the way, there's two more wild cards in each league. It happened last year, so what's to say it won't happen?
That would be very funny. I'm assuming like all these games on opening day are going to be on national television, right, on ESPN, and I could just – I don't have the schedule in front of me, but I think the Yankees are playing the Blue Jays, right, on opening day?
Yes, and we'll have it on Yes, but nationally it'll
be on ESPN. Right, but nationally it's going to be on ESPN. And, like, in the top of the fifth inning, they go to Buster Olney, who announces that they've expanded the postseason, and starting tomorrow there's going to be a universal DH.
And you know what? It would be pathetic if it wasn't so funny, because we've lived it. It happened.
It did.
It happened.
Well, it wasn't during play, but it was just before the first pitch. It was the day of the opening day.
Yeah, I believe there was a game played already. I really believe there was a game played.
That I don't remember, but I'll take your word for it.
But of all the teams out there, the Mets, for their defensive structure, they need the DH. Because Alonso's a perfect DH. And Dominic Smith is a much better first baseman than Pete Alonso is. But if there's no DH and Alonso's got to play first, then Dominic Smith has to play left, and Dominic Smith is not Barry Bonds in left field. He's just not. But he can hit. He can hit. And the Mets do have pieces like Kevin Pillar, who they signed, Albert Amora, who they signed, that will tighten up the defense as well. Obviously, their biggest acquisition to me was Lindor. It changes everything.
Sure.
That's how good he is. That's how special he is. So I think New York fans should be excited. Both teams have a chance. I think the Yankees have a much better chance than the Mets, because I don't see the American League having great teams. The White Sox, as I mentioned, are my biggest threat when I look at it. I still think the Twins, although the Yankees always handle the Twins in the postseason.
Oh, my God, they do.
The Toronto Blue Jays are good. They're getting better. I don't know. I don't think they're there yet. And I still would not ignore Tampa Bay. They're too smart. They know what they're doing.
Hey, I think they can make the playoffs, but over 162 games, I don't see how the Yankees do not win this division. And normally you would say, right, Peter, injuries can happen. Injuries don't even seem to stop this team. Now, I do think you poke the bear too many times, eventually you come up empty. I guess that's possible, but they just seem to have that depth. And again, we're going to follow the Yankees, and the fans are excited because they're a popular team and people want to watch them. But, I mean, is there a Yankee fan out there that's concerned?
Oh, yes.
They're not winning this division?
Oh, we'll hear it when we take phone calls.
But who's going to win? Like, listen, winning a championship, I understand your concern because you haven't done it since 2009, and it's a crapshoot once you get to the playoffs. But winning this division, I need to hear something tangible that tells me you're concerned you're not winning this division.
To me, the question with the Yankees, again, I feel like it'll be a broken record. What are the chances that come summertime, we're not talking about the Yankees dealing with a rash of injuries and how do they overcome these injuries?
Well, you don't know, and obviously if you don't study history, you're doomed to repeat it, and the Yankees get hurt all the time. But this is the second year of supposedly the best strength and conditioning guy out there in Eric Cressy. The first year, you know, he's just putting in his program. This year, you know, he told Meredith Marakovitz on a Hot Stove show that Stanton and Judge are not lifting as much weights. They're doing more stretching and yoga and stuff like that, and that should stop leg injuries, and we'll see. We'll see if Eric Cressy's influence does, in fact, kick in. And he's a big part of what they've done, too, because it was on his recommendation that they went out and they signed Kluber for $11 million. And, you know, Kluber has worked extensively with Cressy, who not only works for the Yankees, but has his own performance studio where athletes just flock because he's that respected. We'll see what he's going to mean to the Yankees. Let's listen to Tim Kurkjian. He was on DCR this morning. You can hear them every Monday through Friday from 5 to 8, our great morning show. He was asked, are the Yankees the best team in the American League?
I kind of like the way they've gone about this. Instead of maybe giving Trevor Bauer $40 million a year when they just gave Gerrit Cole something like that, they're going to take some chances here, and it's risky. However, their bullpen is still really good. Their lineup is tremendous. They're going to the playoffs. They're the best team in the East for me as it is. And if Kluber and Taillon and Severino comes back and some other guys work out, they have a chance to be, you know, the best team certainly in the American League this year if everything goes right.
If everything goes right. But I guess every team could say that. But the Dodgers have so much talent and so much pitching, everything doesn't have to go right, and I still can't see them, you know, not making a run. Now, Aaron Boone met with the media today, and he said, do you have the players to win a World Series?
I do, absolutely. Talk is always cheap, obviously, at this point, but I really like the winter that we've had with some of the additions we've made that I think are going to be impactful to go along with already the makeup of this team that is of championship caliber. And that's what we're here to try and do and try to accomplish, and we get to start that in earnest tomorrow. A lot of the groundwork is laid. A lot of that foundation is laid throughout the winter with guys in their off-season programs. But now we get to come together as a team and start trying to lay what we hope is that championship foundation. And, you know, hopefully this is the year we get to the top of that mountain. We certainly feel like we have a club that's in that mix.
And before we break, let's hear from Kurkjian about the Mets, because Timmy on DCR said he was asked, are the Mets done making moves? Here's Tim Kurkjian.
I think they'll do something else, but I think they're done with the big moves because the big players are essentially gone. And yes, I thought they would get Springer or Bauer, and they didn't. And that's, for a Mets fan, I guess that's slightly disappointing. But they also got one of the five best players in the game at Francisco Lindor. He won't be enough for them to pass the Nationals and the Braves and everyone else in that ridiculously strong division. But the catcher, McCann, makes them better. They've added some pitching help. So I think the Mets are a legitimate contender for a playoff spot with what they've done. Is it everything they wanted to do? No. But they had a good offseason. I don't think there's any way around that.
And I did leave out, they did get Trevor May, and that makes their bullpen a little bit better. But their bullpen, because who's the closer? What Edwin Diaz are we going to see? That's a concern to me. Well, we're going to let you talk about this. So baseball is in the air, a new beginning. Everybody but the Orioles and some other teams have a chance. So let's talk about it. 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years.
Got a very funny story later if you want.
About?
Just about me and Nancy.
Interesting.
That I discovered just moments ago. It was very disturbing. Yeah.
It's disturbing.
Oh, yeah.
You want to do it now?
Yeah, because she... What happened was she went out to get cat food and litter for the cats earlier.
Obviously not for the kids.
So And that's heavy. There's the food's in cans, and the litter is just obnoxiously heavy.
Oh yeah.
So I wanted to make sure that I was,
you know, urine.
But she was urine. she had a lot going on, so I didn't know when she was going to come home, and I had to go jump into the shower. So just as I'm about to jump into the shower, I hear a noise, and I think she pulled up. So I wanted to quickly look out the window to see if she had pulled up, and then I would have thrown something on and gone down and helped her out.
Where are the children at this point?
In daycare.
Okay.
But the only room upstairs that I can get a view of the driveway is their room, right? So I dart out of, I dart out of our room, go into their room, look out the window. Nancy's not there.
And you have no clothes on.
No clothes on.
Okay.
But there's a motion sensor camera in their room that has an alert on her phone when somebody goes in. But she didn't see the alert live in real time. But what it does is just send her the picture at the time that the room had somebody enter in it.
Dear God.
So on her phone is a picture of me naked in their room going in to look out the window. I thought that was fun.
That is very good.
I mean, if there's, you know, we probably have some expert hackers that listen to the show. If you could get into the LaGreca system, you've got a nude picture of Don.
Well, there you go. I would not suggest that. Although, I'm looking better.
There you go. You might enjoy it a bit.
I dipped under 240.
Nice.
There you go.
Was it 238 today? Which doesn't sound like much, but you know, knowing me and my history, Peter, you those heinous pictures of me back in like the 2010s, where you didn't even want to look at the pictures of that one picture with me and Lawrence Taylor. You're like, you wanted to take it down off the studio wall. You were just disgusted
for your sake, because I care for you.
That's 285, Don.
Wow.
And you're under three bills.
Michael, what's your all-time high?
I used to weigh in college like 260, 270.
You could be a solid NFL tight end.
I look like Dave Remington. If Google that all-time offensive lineman. I had no neck.
I've seen the offensive lineman look for you.
Yeah, it's not a good look.
Carried
it well, yeah.
Of saying somebody's fat but not disgusting.
You guys together in like 2000, you know, at a certain time, could have been like great guard tackle combination for
a great rap group, the Beefy Brothers.
There was a joke like when Mike and Chris were big that they were like the number 10.
Yep.
Because Chris was like skinny, so he was one, and Francesa would be zero. There was a time where Michael and I were like double zero.
Robert Parrish.
Yeah. Right. Oh, look at you. Now, I had a little bit of a weird story yesterday. So I got a haircut yesterday. But I'm still fearful of going to the barber. So the guy cuts my hair in town. He will come to my house and cut my hair outside.
That's nice.
Outside? Oh, right. Yesterday was nice, though. It was a nice
day.
Well,
so I texted him when I said, Junior, would you come by at 6:30 to cut my hair? And he said, sure. And when I texted him, it was 53 degrees. But 6:30, I'm sitting outside, and it was probably 20 degrees. It was so cold. And I wanted him to be Edward Scissorhands, like cut that fast. It was so cold. It was a bad move when you ask somebody to come over at 53 degrees and it drops 33 degrees.
Yeah, it dropped out of nowhere. But yesterday it was great because we got this doom and gloom about the ice, and I think earlier in the day that was the case. But when I was driving into the garden yesterday, it was really nice.
I got to tell you, Don, I have to almost give it up to Michael. It's his discipline and borderline psychosis on how he's handled COVID, still a year in, it's impressive.
Can't drop your guard now, right?
This is, yeah. I mean, I guess this wouldn't be the time.
See, Jody and I had a conversation about this yesterday because a lot of her friends from around where we live, they're in Florida with their kids. And she said, are we being too, like, vigilant? I said, yeah, but isn't it discretion the better part of valor here? Isn't it better to be too vigilant? Because if we drop our, they're younger people, the people that are in Florida. I'm 60 now. A lot of issues, too. I'd go down in a second. It would not be good. So that's why I'm doing it.
But I get it. We're so close. We can see the light at the end of the tunnel, right? And we're almost a calendar year into this thing. Now, you're right. This is not where you want to let your guard down.
Well, here's the thing. I think we'd be in a different place if we didn't see the light
Right.
But when you look at the numbers of how effective the vaccine is,
very heartening.
It is very heartening, and it seems pretty clear that I believe that we'll be in pretty good shape to like some level of normalcy by the fall. I really do. Yeah. So, you know, listen, because I would tell you, if we still had no light at the end of the tunnel, I would say you might have to figure out a way to start doing things and finding a level of comfort. But, I mean, you might as well consider being a psycho. You're right here at the end. Got a few months.
That's hurtful, really. You're the guy who's always like talking about, man, so I'm doing all the right things and I'm a psycho.
But, like, for example,
normal.
If you ask Junior, is he being safe? Has he been tested? Maybe like, hey, could you get tested? Can you see?
No. Junior is terrific. But if you go up to the barbershop.
No, but if he comes to your house, you have a gigantic house. You bring him in the house. He wears a double mask.
He also wants. But the kids, I'm very careful. Jody's very careful. The kids go to school every day. So that's the biggest concern. So Junior wants to. Yeah, the kids are in the house.
But what if you test and Junior tests? Then he could come to your house.
Well, isn't it better he just does it outside?
It's 20 degrees. I mean, yeah, I guess. Ask him.
I think he would prefer it.
He prefers getting that Michael K. guap. So he's.
I was talking to Jill, who owns Blondie's, the great wings place on the West Side.
Oh, sure.
The business is down 80%. Nobody's going inside. And you're not allowed.
Well, I'm not going inside to eat at a restaurant with strangers, right. But I would potentially have a barber that I know.
Well,
in
Junior
my home.
Said that. Junior said that in the shop, it's like they're down 60%. He said people are starting to come back now, but it's still 60% less than it was last year.
But you
time.
Just gave the perfect example of how I view things. I would not go to Blondie's to eat inside. Unfortunately, even 25% capacity, I wouldn't do it. However, someone who I know. As an individual, to come over and wear a double mask and cut my hair, I would do. So you see what I'm saying?
No, I understand. You're but a lot you, younger I, than I am, too.
But I respect how you're doing it.
You're
I
a
mean,
lot
listen.
Younger than I am. So the odds go up exponentially each year. So I'm closing in on the bad numbers.
You're just
a child. I mean, you're a hairless child.
I do. Today, I really am a hairless child. By the way, my parents both got their first round.
And how did it go?
It was fine.
Oh, this is so exciting.
Oh, believe me, they are so desperate to be able to live some life. So, yeah.
I am so frustrated that I can't. I mean, I can't get it. I can't get the shot. And I thought that Jody and I could get it in New York because we both work in New York. No. You have to live specifically in New York City, which we don't any longer. So it's just very frustrating. Very frustrating. But just. Cross your fingers and wait. 1-800. Did you also see the story about the NBA players? Sources told ESPN the big time NBA players do not want to take part in any kind of like public endorsing of the vaccine. They feel very hinky about it. They won't do it.
Yeah, there are a lot of people with a lot of concerns and doubts around about the vaccine.
I think if you're a public figure like that. And you don't want to endorse the vaccine, I think it's your obligation to tell me why.
Fair? But they're going to say it's because they don't know enough about it and have enough of an understanding to push it to people who may otherwise be skeptical.
Right.
You know, like I... This is an
issue. Well,
then
that would be a reason. Give me that reason.
Right. I think what people would probably say is the black community, in particular in this country, feels very left out by the medical community and do not feel like they've generally been cared for. Now you all want us to take this vaccine? Why? Now, there are a lot of people who can give answers as to why and who can say, well, listen, this situation is different. This vaccine has been worked on for a long time. But, you know, it's terrible because this illness was disproportionately bad in the black community. And then immediately they're the community that people want to take it first for multiple reasons. Number one, the community has been most affected. And number two, and we can't be disingenuous about this, people want brown and black people to get back to work because they make society function. So there's reasons why this is happening. But what all I try to relay to people is from my generally lily white world that I come from, the building that I live in, my family back in Maryland, all I say is the upper middle class and wealthy white people that I know are all desperate to get the vaccine.
Yep.
Do with that what you will.
Now, leave it to Rick DiPietro to put things into perspective where he proves me right. So he texted me and said, the Kansas City Chiefs knew their barber, and look how that turned out.
Save DiPietro!
You know what? It's a great point by Rick.
It's a great point. That's why he is.
But that still made no sense. But that still made no sense. That guy should have been tested in advance. They completely dropped the ball there. I think you and Junior could do a better job.
Yes.
Evidence suggests the Chiefs didn't do a great job with any preparation that week.
You wouldn't let that happen, Michael, what happened with the Chiefs.
No, but you can take a test and be negative but still be carrying it, and it doesn't show up yet. So,
but you wouldn't let him come into the house when he's got a test pending. That's what Kansas City.
Right.
Does. Right, right. Nobody wants to hear about this. We don't want to talk about sports. We'll do that. Bad night for the Rangers. Great night for Don on the play-by-play.
James Harden, by the way.
Go, Jim.
Jimbo.
Jim. We'll talk about that, too. Knicks play tonight, try to get to 500. We'll talk about that. Who wants to talk about COVID? We've had enough of it. Let's get it over with. Let's get some shots. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
So the Rangers are struggling, but the Nets are not. They've won four straight games. The Nets beat the Suns yesterday, 128-124. Now, this is not some hack team. Phoenix is 17-10 after that loss, and that's on the road. And the Nets have done very well against the West. Here's one of those stats I was going to throw at your face, Peter.
All right.
The Nets are 8-3 against Western Division teams. No other Eastern team has an over 500 record against the West.
Wow.
So yesterday, the Nets were down 74-49 in the second quarter. They came all the way back. They did it without Kyrie Irving. They did it without Kevin Durant. Jim Harden was the man. 38 points, 11 assists, 7 rebounds. He's been unbelievable.
Plus the clutch go-ahead three.
They scored the final 12 points of the game. And they're doing this. I mean, we want to criticize Steve Nash because he's a neophyte and who's really coaching the team. This is the 20th different lineup they've thrown out there in 30 games. 20th different. And the 9th different starting lineup in a row. So they have not been able to get anything in terms of continuity. And they knock off a really good team on the road. And next up is going to be the Lakers on Thursday, and it'll be interesting to see if either Kyrie or Durant are back. But this is how good the Nets are. I don't want to go overboard on them. You lose arguably one of the best players in basketball history in Kevin Durant. He's out with a hamstring injury. Then you lose one of the best players in basketball in Kyrie Irving. He's out. That would derail most teams, losing two great players. But no. They have Jim Harden, who decides to go off 38-11-7. This team is good. So you can look at this and assume that all three, barring something catastrophic, are going to be playing when they make the playoffs. There's not a team, I think, in the East that beats them. I really don't. Now, there's teams in the West that can, but if Anthony Davis is out for an extended period of time and is not back for the playoffs, then I don't think the Lakers could beat them either. We'll see how the Lakers do against whoever the Nets send out tomorrow, but the bottom line, this Nets team is fun to watch because they could score with anybody. Yeah, the defense is still questionable, but the bottom line is they could score with anybody, and that was an impressive win last night.
Well, and it's one of the reasons why you're so excited about the James Harden deal, because in getting Harden, you have support on a team with Kevin Durant, who's coming off of a catastrophic injury, Kyrie Irving, who seems to be at least somewhat susceptible to missing time semi-regularly, and you have maybe the best scorer in the league. This is a guy who on his own, on the worst team in the league, if James Harden was on the worst team in basketball, he'd probably still will them to 30 wins. So you have a guy who's that good that even when everything else is failing, he has you as a team that can basically can compete with anyone.
It's Could it be possible that when it's all said and done, he's the guy more than KD?
No.
Plays every game.
I wouldn't rule that out.
Plays every game.
If they end up getting a high seeding, if they're really able to stay in the top three, my guess is a lot of that is going to fall on James Harden. I mean, you're the one who always says it, Michael. He plays every night.
That's just who he's a leader than KD is, right?
But KD is a more important player, I think. Because even a team with the Warriors, right? Seth Curry was amazing. Klay Thompson was amazing. Draymond Green. But the most important player was Kevin Durant.
Yeah, but
he's the best player.
I get that, but that's a couple of years ago. He's coming off a major injury. Just because of the circumstances for this year, because he plays every day. Because, you know, KD's going to have those maintenance days too, right, built into coming off that injury. Plus, he's had other things to have to deal with. Is it possible?
No,
that this team wins a championship or goes to the finals and we say, you know what, at least this year it was Harden's team.
I think it's possible, Don. I think he's the most dominant scorer in basketball. I don't think anyone in the league can score and dominate as easily as Harden can.
But before he was knocked out with the contact tracing, people were talking about KD being the MVP of the league.
Okay, no. He's incredible.
You're right. He's the better player. But again, this year,
I think he's going to be important.
No, of course he's going to be important. That's not the question. The question is, could it still, like, looking at this being, at least for temporary, that it's Harden's team? Do you realize, I know it's a different league, he's second all-time in triple-doubles on the Nets.
Yeah. I think he's one behind Jason Kidd, right?
No.
Yeah, I think he's one behind Kidd.
No. He's one place. Yeah, he's one place behind Kidd.
Yeah. He's second all-time in triple-doubles with, like, eight. First is Jason Kidd with 60. Now you had to pass Sean Bradley and Kenny Anderson. But again, triple-doubles, you can do them in your sleep now in this league, more so than you could 20 years ago. And plus, Kidd would like flirt with triple-doubles and one of them not be scoring.
Oh, yeah, I know. Not to mention, if you were able to see how many times Kidd almost got a triple-double, sort of like the Don list, 6 through 10, if you're able to see how many times he was a rebound short or a point short.
The I thought about it list.
Yeah, the I thought about it list. He's...
But did he ever get a triple-double where it was like steals, blocks, and assists?
Steals
or like rebounds, steals, and assists?
Steals would be very hard.
The thing that is most impressive about the Nets this year to me, they haven't had the full complement of players. And they're one game behind the Sixers for the top spot in the East. One game. Two in the loss column, but one game.
Where would this team be without the big three? And they didn't make the deal for Harden, right?
Well, they'd be the fourth seed, fifth seed maybe.
All right, so now you're a four or five seed and you add Harden? So could this team...
Oh, you mean... I thought you meant if they didn't have KD and... No, they would be... They'd have a record similar to this.
Jason
without
Kidd,
the big three.
With just the big two?
No,
yeah.
No. What I'm saying is
without the big
KD.
Three?
They don't
no
sign
KD.
Kyrie.
Well, they'd be right where the Knicks are.
Right, so they'd be a playoff team.
Yeah.
So now you got a playoff team and you add Harden, right? Just that alone would probably get you, you know, a four seed, right?
Mm-hmm. Probably.
Then that's how good Harden is, and also that's how, let's not underestimate how good the core was before the big three got here. And then you had a KD and Kyrie, so we really should not be surprised if this team makes it out of these. And that's why the expectation should be that they're going to.
I got some information for you, Don, from the brilliant producer of the Nets on Yes, Frank DeGrace. The only triple-double in Nets history with steals is Kendall Gill.
Yep.
He had an NBA record 11 steals in the game, never for Kidd.
And Kendall Gill.
Five triple-doubles for Harden. Jazz, Lakers, Clippers, Sixers, Bucks, top five teams beside the Nets. The Nets are 4-1 and yet to play the Lakers.
Kendall Gill had 11 steals in a game, April 3rd, 1999.
That's
Jason Kidd, I don't think, ever had more than, I'm looking at the top individual steal games of all time, and he's not. He never got nine or more.
And it would no. And he's in no position to ever get double digits in blocks.
There was I read a story about Larry Bird about this, who had double figures in points during a game, double figures in rebounds. He had double figures in assists, and he had nine.
That's right, nine steals.
He had nine steals.
February 18th, 1985 against Utah.
And it was like he was sitting on the bench about 10 minutes left in the game, and the coach said to him, you know, you need one more steal for a quadruple-double, and Bird just sat back and went, nah, I've done enough damage.
I think yesterday or 2 days ago was the – or 3 days ago, it was the 35th anniversary of the night when Larry felt like playing, shooting left hand the entire game.
Larry was special.
Triple-double. 47, 14, and 11.
Beautiful. Jake in Sparta, New Jersey. Jake?
Hey, what's up, guys? How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I just want to say, Don, I love your podcast. I'm a common. I send in a lot of questions on Twitter. I love your answers. You got great insight. Peter, I want to say congratulations on the 24/7 former championship, but I expect you to take it back this weekend.
Listen.
Just got to line up an official, right?
Well, there's a lot of opportunities because there's SNL this week, but then Elimination Chamber on Sunday, and I'm guessing Bad Bunny will be there. So there'll be opportunities.
Wow.
Well, I'm saying if you're going to tweet out asking for an official in New York City, I mean, that's going to put a lot of people on the edge of their seats, you know?
But it also puts people on alert. So
there's a problem.
That's what it is.
So my problem is with you, actually. A few months ago when the whole James Harden thing started to Brooklyn, you were calling. You were going for the whole Jim Harden thing, right? Is that correct?
I love Jim Harden.
Yeah, you love Jim Harden. I have Michael Kay over here is calling James Harden Jim Harden regularly on the radio, but not even 10 minutes ago you referred to him as James Harden. If you're going to try to get something going here, I mean,
great point, Jay.
You know what,
to sell your point,
was it a slip up?
That's my bad.
Michael on top of his game here?
No, that's my bad. I need to always call him Jim Harden. I you know what, I created Jim Harden Watch, and yet I still call him James. That's my bad.
Now let me ask you this, is the 24/7 title transcendent enough that it could be a skit on SNL and somebody in the cast win the title? Like, would people get it enough for them to try it?
No, I mean, I think if you did it in the middle of a skit, it would be an Easter egg that some people get. Okay. Now, I'll tell you this, though. R-Truth is legitimately hilarious. So, like, them working R-Truth into a skit is not the worst idea in the world. But my guess is that Bad Bunny will perform on stage one of his songs. He will have the title with him.
I'm going to get you, Michael Kay!
Why do we always play that one? It's always the wrong drop that we
play. You are so jealous. This is what the man said, man.
Yeah, but there's another man who said something else.
But you're in the distance. This guy said it right into the microphone. You're like jumping around like a little kid.
Here is your winner and the new 24/7 champion, Peter Rosenberg.
Sounds so good.
I mean, but it's so long. You know, brevity is the key to comedy. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, I like that one.
And it's just so funny that he brought Michael Kay up thinking it was you.
Yeah, it's troubling also.
All right, so the Nets' 21-point comeback win against the Suns. The Nets are now 1-106 when trailing by 21 or more points at the half in franchise history.
Wow.
Also, the Nets trailed yesterday by 24 points, making it the second largest comeback win in the last 25 seasons. And you could watch the Nets on YES. When we come back, the Knicks play tonight, and it's an important game. Why? You got to wait. I'll tell you. The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. It's Kay, LaGreca, Rosenberg, the former 24/7 champion, and you right here on YES and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Michael K. Show.
The Nets beat the Suns yesterday, 128-124. Now, this is not some hack team. Phoenix is 17-10 after that loss. The Nets were down 74-49 in the second quarter. They came all the way back. Jim Harden was the man. 38 points, 11 assists, 7 rebounds. He's been unbelievable. This is the 20th different lineup they've thrown out there in 30 games. And the 9th different starting lineup in a row. You lose arguably one of the best players in basketball history in Kevin Durant. He's out. Then you lose one of the best players in basketball in Kyrie Irving. He's out. That would derail most teams, losing two great players. But no, no, no. They have Jim Harden, who decides to go off 38-11-7. This team is good.
The Michael K. Show.
Could it be possible that when it's all said and done, he's the guy more than KD?
No.
On 98.7 ESPN.
At least Peter entertained it.
I entertained it. There was a pregnant pause. I thought about it. It was provocative. You're very provocative. As you know, there's a picture of you somewhere in cyberspace right now, nude, taken today. For those that didn't know, Don ran into the kids' room there, the preschool, and he thought he heard Nancy outside, and he was in the shower, ran through, and there's a monitor in the baby's room, and it sent a picture of Don nude to Nancy on the phone.
Troubling.
So somebody who was very savvy on the internet could somehow hack that picture.
The fact that you're rooting for that, though, that's
I'm not rooting.
Well, he's
I'm not
you know
rooting.
What? And I saw the picture. Go have at it.
Oh, so you're happy with it?
He loves it.
Yeah.
Is it sidle nudity, backle, or frontal?
It's full frontal.
Wow.
Wow, that is
unbelievable. God, that has to be gotten.
Yeah. So you want to see him nude? Is what you're saying?
No. I don't. I think I would turn away. He's my friend. I don't want to see him, but I want the world to get a look. I think the show would really rock it.
I do well.
But if he wasn't your friend, then you'd want to see.
No, I wouldn't. No.
I'm just. I'm just trying to get clarity here.
What kind of steak was it? You seem like a bone-in guy.
Well, if anybody does try to hack that, full prosecution.
Oh,
full
really?
Prosecution.
The word hack is inappropriate in this sense. So let's
or
just drop
it depends,
it.
You know.
So much of the world is about perception and optics, a
sure.
word that we use a lot. So today, the Mets and the Yankees, they're reporting. It's the beginning. It's a whole new world. Everybody has a chance. Hope springs eternal. The whole deal. Baseball season's like the beginning of a year for a lot of people. Not for Don. He's never been a big fan of the magic of pitchers and catchers.
No, because there's no magic. I'm just being honest. And
do you realize,
this is coming from a baseball fan. All right, pitchers and catchers, so what? All right, there's no games. I'm not down there.
But it's the unofficial start of baseball season.
Way unofficial.
Okay, but it's always been that way. But that's not the point. This is the first year since 1987 that I will not go to spring training. Oh. I just thought of that.
Since 87?
Yeah. 87.
It sounds to me like a first world problem.
It is. It is. I was just talking out loud, okay? There's no need
no,
to
but
be
it's,
snotty.
It's pretty significant. That's 34 years.
But it's not even about it being whether it's a first world problem. Or it's not a problem. It's just interesting.
I'm shocked. Again, I don't want to have anybody not be there. But newspapers are always crying poverty. They don't have the money. They just don't have the money. I'm shocked that they're sending writers down. You're not having any interaction with the players. None. Zero.
But
except on Zoom, which you could do in your living room.
Yeah, what's the point?
And God bless the papers if they want to spend the money. And great for the writers, I understand. But if I was trying to save money, that would be the way I would save money.
But hear me out. You're trying to save the industry, right?
Yep.
All right. This is the one sport where I think they probably have the most fans that still read the paper. of the four major sports.
Oh, I understand, but you will have no access to players.
No, but I understand it, but it's still to be down there, the perception of being down there, try to get whatever information that you can. It's an everyday sport. Like, baseball's an everyday thing. It's perfect for newspapers and reporting. And if you're not going to send them to this, then you're not sending them to anything. So I understand you could probably do it from home. But that person from home will probably feel like that they won't really get some of the inside
most people,
information.
Like, if Joel Sherman wrote a column today, if it had Tampa there in the first word in the column, I don't think the average Joe or Jane knows, well, that means he's in Tampa. If he writes a column, they're going to think he's in the know. Again, I want the papers to send everybody, except that I know that they're financially struggling. And sending somebody down for 6 weeks of spring training is costly. It really is.
I know. But you should be very happy about this.
I am thrilled.
I've been thinking a lot about what life's going to be like after the pandemic because I'm so looking forward to it. But if you're able to do the job from home, then that'll be the way it's always done.
Yep. Bob Klapisch for the Bergen Record wrote a really interesting column over the weekend. He said the days of like a good reporter talking to somebody and getting a story, they're over. They're absolutely over. This is a brave new world. It's not going back because baseball teams are going to say, well, listen, you're able to do but you're not going to get special stories. You're just not. Like, I was able to like talk to Billy Martin when everybody had left. I was able to get stuff that nobody else got. Now everybody's getting the same thing. They're all on the same Zoom call. There's no one-on-ones with anybody. Bob Klapisch was an extraordinary reporter. He was embedded with the 86 Mets, embedded with them. Yeah. He knew everything that was going on. But those days are over. The special reporters don't exist anymore. You have to do things on the phone. And just to get a player's phone number, you can't even get that anymore because you're not going to ask somebody on Zoom for it.
No, but I think the really good ones, Michael, will find a way to be able to get the inside information.
Like, I hope.
And if it's a trusted reporter, then maybe you'll be able to get their phone number or have some sort of access to them that you might not be able to get anyplace else. Like, is it possible? Again, I don't know how it's going to work protocol-wise, but is it possible that a reporter that's there all the time, that's trusted within the organization,
right,
couldn't outside of Zoom get a socially distant conversation with a player or coach?
You're not going to be allowed on field. You're not going to be allowed in the clubhouse or on the field. You're just not.
No, but not on the field. But is there something that maybe, if you trust them, that something can be arranged outside? I'm asking. I'm not speculating.
It's a good question. I don't know.
Because that's reporting, right? It's finding a way, finding a creative way of being able to get information.
But I think there's such a force field up around everybody now that if it happens, I don't know if this is the year that is going to happen.
And listen, this is how the players want it, right? This is perfect for the players.
They dream about this. You think they want reporters hanging around in their workplace? That's exactly what being in the clubhouse is. Now they spend 10 minutes on Zoom and their media responsibility is over. Now, the reason I started with the optics and the way things are looked at, the Mets today fired their hitting performance coordinator, Ryan Ellis. He was fired last month, actually. It was reported today by The Athletic for sexual harassment. Three separate women came up. Now, I think that this happens on a lot of teams, unfortunately, and a lot of sports. But, Don, you're a Met fan. It's just not a good look that it just keeps popping up that it's the Mets. It's just, you know, Mickey Callaway, the GM Porter. Now, this guy as well. It's going to have the perception, you know, again, perception becomes reality and optics are terrible. What is happening in Queens that this stuff is allowed to go on? And a lot of the complaints about this guy Ellis happened in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but is this perception? This is just what it is.
Well, but see, that's the thing, Peter, because the whole question is this a baseball problem or a Met problem? Now, I think it's a baseball problem. It's a societal problem, but if it was a baseball problem, then how come we're not seeing this happen in other organizations? Like, it just seems like it's happening to the Mets, but it's not like, well, the Yankees have had four and the Twins have had three. I mean, this is the third thing that has come up in like a 3-week span where it's easy to say, well, this is tolerated in baseball, but it circles back, you know, to the Mets. So why aren't we hearing this in other organizations? Do they do a better job of covering it up? Do less people care that they fire somebody and it just doesn't make the news? But this is the third story, Peter, of either a former Met coach or somebody in the organization or a current one that is relieved of their duties because of an indiscretion.
So this is all of the above. It is a society problem. It's a sports problem. It's a baseball problem. But it is most definitely a Mets problem. It happened. You hear the first story. Okay. You have the GM. You have Mickey Callaway. Now you have this hitting coach. Guys, at some point when you see the smoke coming out of the windows, you got to go, okay, well, there may be other problems in the neighborhood, but this house has a fire. And this one's also kind of, isn't this problematic too? Because they tried to do this really quietly?
Yeah, we wouldn't have known it unless the Athletic uncovered it.
See, to me, that's what makes me worry that they're not figuring it out right now. That these stories predate the Steve Cohen regime. But the fact that they tried to do that quietly, because they didn't want to call any attention to it, is a missed opportunity for them to show people that they're actually taking this really seriously and they're not going to tolerate it. Why would you hide it?
It's weird. And this guy worked for the organization for over 14 years. So I will tell you this about the Mets. I was actually talking to a friend the other day about it. The Mets have always had, and I don't know why, they've had a frat house atmosphere. When you look at that 86 team,
yeah,
and you've read the books, you've heard the stories of what went on, and you know, just sexual antics. Don, you lived it. That team should have won 3 or 4 world championships. They frat housed themselves out of their mind to just one championship. And if it wasn't for Bill Buckner having the ball go through his legs, would they have had that one? That team was so good that they should have won multiple championships, and they didn't. And I've always heard stories about this. I never covered the Mets. I was always on the Yankee beat when I was a writer and then became a broadcaster. But you read about it. You read books about it. It's just, it was like Animal House. Why? Why was it like that at Shea and now Citi Field? I don't get it. So I hope that this is the last straw that, you know, and there's no camel's back that's broken.
Well, that's the hope, right, is that, all right, well, this all is coming out now with you have new ownership. Because all of that was owned by, well, Doubleday, but also Wilpon. And the stories about the 86 Mets, I mean, the big story, Peter's probably heard this before, is how they absolutely trashed the plane on the way back from Houston after they won Game 6. Like, it's a big, major story. Like, they tore it up. And then, I guess, what was it? The airline sent the Mets a bill. And Frank Cashman brought it to like Davey Johnson and said, this is the bill. And Davey just ripped it up and threw it back at him. And that, I don't know if that's folklore, if that's a factual story, but that just shows you. Now, that team won, but like, what was tolerated? You hear the stories about, remember, was it Michael Brett Saberhagen with the bleach? You know, shooting the bleach at the media and all. So there has always been this like frat house thing, even going back even recently, the way like Harvey kind of ran things in the clubhouse and sometimes alienated other pitchers and how he was able to do whatever he wanted. Didn't want to talk to the media, didn't have to talk to the media. They've always had this, let the players kind of do what they want. The Mets took care of it. Who am I supposed to blame but the Wilpons? They owned the team during all that time. And now Cohen takes over, and now we're starting to see some of this get rooted out. I guess that's the best-case scenario, right, Peter, is that,
yeah, but
that now it's not happening under Cohen. New ownership. They're going back. They're letting go of this, and maybe this is all coming to an end.
But mistake,
it's still happening in real time right now. We're 3 major stories are all involving the Mets.
But that's what makes this one a mistake. This was a missed opportunity by the Mets. And instead, they buried it, which to me says, are you guys different?
Now, Luis Rojas,
really trying to be different or not?
Their manager talked about changing the culture. Here's Rojas.
You know, we've released statements on situations like that. You know, but under a new ownership and, you know, in the addition of Sandy as well there, you know, we'd set new expectations. And there's also new avenues, you know, added to it, you know, to report cases like this. So, you know, it's been disappointing, I'm sorry, to see it from afar. When you get to these reports, to this news, and upsetting. But, you know, going back to the statement, it's, you know, they've handled it like that, and I think it's been the right thing. It's just those misconducts, I mean, they're just unacceptable. We should have a safe environment, you know, to work, safe workplace, and everyone should feel safe around it.
You know, Aaron Boone met the media today, too, and yes, carried it live at noon, and he was asked something about, you know, what's going on. And I got to tell you what, it's not a question for the manager of the team, man. It's just not.
That's a tough spot for
him. That's a real bad spot for Rojas and Boone. It's not their gig. They're not running the organization. That's a GM or an owner's question.
But I will say this. They may not be running the organization, but if they wanted to take an aggressive stance publicly, they could help set the tone of the organization.
Well, they are, especially Boone, a face of the organization. They're the ones that constantly talk to the media more so than ownership does. It's a tough spot for Rojas, but he said all the right things, and now there's an accountability there. So now that will be thrown back in his face if one of his coaches or, God forbid, him gets in a little trouble. So I like the fact that they're saying something because they are the faces of the organization, but it's still a tough spot, especially for Rojas, right? I mean, he's been here 5 minutes.
Yeah, but he's been part of the organization forever. And this is an organizational situation.
On a minor league level. This is not somebody that's overly savvy with the media. He's been a manager for, 60 games?
But do we at some point need to talk about the fact that maybe given everything that's going on here, Sandy being back may not be the best thing?
Yeah, but if you know Sandy, he's such an upstanding guy, a Marine and stuff like that. I can't believe that this went on his watch knowing it.
A lot of upstanding guys, who generally upstanding guys, came up in an era where certain things were just things they looked away from or were used to, or just they're from a different time and didn't see it as being as problematic. Or maybe it's not that. Maybe it's that Sandy was unaware, which is also problematic. But what I'm saying is, if you're trying to move forward and say the Mets organization's in a different place in 2021 than it was back then, but the person you have now helping run operations is known from being around back then, that's not great. And I really I'd like to hear a really aggressive message from Sandy about this. Like the Rojas answer to me was him sort of fighting to get through an awkward question. Take an aggressive stance. Announce that they're doing a public town hall. Like, they need to okay, so what are we going to do if in 2 weeks we're talking about another one?
Also where Major League Baseball has to step in.
Or maybe it's that, but if you're the Mets, you obviously would rather be able to get a hold of it yourselves. I just feel like they're handling it in a way where they're really weaseling around it. They just covered up one that they'd already tried to handle in-house without anyone finding out, but The Athletic finds out, and now they're going to answer to it. But no, get in front of it. If you're serious about change, make the change and talk about it.
And do you have to kind of make a public statement that, hey, if you've seen something, you have to come forward? No longer is it going to be tolerated that you pass the buck or that you ignore the pleas. If you see something, you have to say something. Gone are the days of protecting the organization. Gone are the days of the confidentiality. We have to now maybe not put the person that saw something and ignored it at the same level as the perpetrator, but somewhere near it, because you enabled the situation. So sit down your organization and say, hey, you see something, you're going to have to say something. It no longer is going to be tolerated, you looking the other way, or just putting it in some file cabinet someplace for it to be found later on.
This has a lot of looking the other way to it, because these things were reported to the Mets in 2018. They did not fire this guy. But then they said they received new information this January regarding his behavior in 2017 and 18 and fired him on January 22nd. Really? So when you investigated him, when all these accusations took place, it wasn't enough to fire him. I think maybe the bar's been set at a different height now.
But to Peter's point, you know, when does Sandy come under fire? Because a lot of this happened on his watch. Not all of it, but some of it, right?
And now he's back. And you just said it, Michael. Think about how crazy this is. They've already had to move on from, at the time, two well-known, one really well-known, the former manager, and semi-well-known executive. They had a third one sitting there that they knew about. And they thought the better decision was to wait and see? How much else is there? And I got news for you. If these are the ones that are out, guys, guess what? There is more. In that organization, there is more. Whenever you get a few of these, there's always more to it. So how much more is it going to be? How many will it take before this becomes the biggest story in all of sports?
When do you get to the point where letting go of the person that did it isn't enough? That now we have to look at who is running the organization while these things are happening. So can you just continue? When the person comes out, you fire him. But how many have to pile up, Peter, before you say, well, you know, who was in charge here?
And that's what's so, Don, that's what's so ugly about it. And I'm not trying to bury the guy. Like anyone else, I've always thought he seems like a great guy. But unfortunately, when you go, well, who's the guy in charge here? You look back and you go, oh, it's the guy who's in charge again now.
Well, let's take a brief time out. We talked earlier, and we'll revisit this, the expectations for both of these teams. What are the negatives? What are the positives? Want to hear from you at 1-800-919-3776. It's Michael K., Don LaGreca, and Peter Rosenberg right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.